This is Brian Forrester, and welcome to the Active Investor Podcast, part of Lord Abbett's Investment Conversation Series. In this podcast, we look at what we view are some of the most relevant near-term and longer-term drivers in the market. So, thinking about investor behavior, risk factors, how changing market dynamics can influence security prices and investment strategies, and through a secular lens where some of the big megatrends are building. And today we're back to talking equities. And if you haven't been paying attention, the US equity markets are doing quite well since they bottomed in October and kind of retested in March. And so we'll get into what's been going right with stocks, even amid some of the most pessimistic investor behavior in decades. And joining me today is Darnell Aziz, who is a managing director and portfolio manager here at Lord Abbett. Darnell has been in our industry for over 20 years and at Lord Abbett for most of that time. So Darnell, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to have a good conversation today.
Great. And Darnell has had a very interesting background in the investment management industry. I'd say one of the rare managers out there who spent time in both fixed income and equities. And we'll touch on that in a minute. But I think the timing here today is perfect, since we're going to be focusing on a word getting a lot of attention these days, and that's quality. If you think about after the brutal meltdown in lower quality stocks through the inflation episode we've just been through, there's really an increasing focus on the resiliency of high quality companies. And then what defines that type of business? What is a high quality company? So Darnell oversees our value franchise as well as our dividend focused strategies. And we've long talked about the concept of owning dividend growers, not necessarily for yield or clipping a coupon, though that can be part of it, but really it's about a dividend growth company having a signal of quality. So with that as a backdrop, let's get into our discussion. So Darnell, let's start a little bit with your background and how you found your way into investing and really your particular style of investing.
Sure. Thank you, Brian. Happy to go into my background because it is a bit unique. So as you mentioned at the outset, I have been in industry about 20 years, a little bit over 20 years. I did start right out of college in 2002 here at Lord Abbett. I actually started my career in distribution. I spent 2-3 years in retail and institutional distribution and then transitioned into an investment career as a small cap equity generalist, as an analyst. And, you know, so I started out pretty broad. I was always covering all sectors. Again, more focused on small caps, but the team that I joined also manage, a mid cap product and a multi cap product. So as my career progressed, you know, I took on more responsibilities up and down the market cap spectrum, mainly on the value side, but still across sectors and various verticals. But as you mentioned, I did spend some time as a fixed income portfolio manager. You know, it was more of equity portion of some of our multi-asset strategies here at Lord Abbett. But it was a great experience, about 4 years really working with senior portfolio managers, sitting down next to our fixed income portfolio managers, working with our fixed income analyst. So I did that for about, about 4 years. And then I transitioned back into the equity department to, as you mentioned, to lead our value franchise, as well as, be the portfolio manager on our two equity income strategies. And as far as that history, it makes me a little bit unique. I think when I look at my career, what I try to bring to the table is a diversity of sort of views and opinions that I've been able to accumulate over the years, right? And so you think working with fixed income, gives you a little bit of a different perspective, both on the macro economy, right? There's a lot of time looking at growth rates of the overall economy, obviously interest rates, and how they trickle throughout the economy, the global economy, but also just understanding how fixed income investors look at risk, right? How they look at the balance sheets of a company. So, those relationships are huge for me. So, if there's a company that may be carrying a bit of leverage, and the market may be mispricing that on the false view that that it's a credit issue, we have very tenured and very excellent fixed income analysts and portfolio managers where you can bounce those ideas off them. You can understand sort of what they're looking at. And also you just think about from an equity standpoint, I grew up where people would say, high yield leads the equity market, right? And so you look at different indicators of risk. If the market's selling off but credit spreads haven't necessarily blown out. Maybe that's a false signal in the equity markets, right? I mean, it's all these sort of different things where you're trying to build a mosaic to make a investment decision. And that goes with, you know, some of my small cap previous responsibilities, and we still manage small cap products here. So understanding what, you know, those companies that have different different exposures within the economy, right? What are they seeing? How are they being impacted by some of these secular trends, or even some of our growth investors, right? I mean, I'm going to be a little bit obviously much more valuation sensitive than them, but if I'm looking at you know, what a market opportunity may be, right? They're looking at what things can be and sort of taking into consideration their market outlook or their views on some of maybe the technological changes that are happening in certain sub industries and how that could affect the companies that we look at and that I own in some of my portfolio. So essentially, you're trying to get a good 360 degree view of a company from, you know, the internal expertise that we have at the organization, and also just a little bit of my history and background.
So yeah, thanks for that. So if we get into this idea of quality and dividend growth investing, I mean, you and I have talked about this concept that quality may be the best place for investors coming out of this higher inflation, and it might not be over, right? We may still have higher inflation. I think the consensus is that we will have higher inflation, maybe not what we had in 2021, but higher than what we had in 2019. But a period also maybe of slower growth, maybe more volatile market. And so best place meaning attractive returns with potentially a smoother performance profile is what you can get from quality. So maybe spend a few minutes just explaining your thinking on that term quality and how you think about it.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question, and obviously something that we pay quite close attention to. So quality is just something that is used quite often, I think, in the equity markets when people, you know, it's easy to just say, you know, we own quality companies, but what does that mean, right? And there's traditional measures of quality, certainly like profitability, high ROE or return on invested capital, things like higher margin businesses, things like strong balance sheets, or even just, you know, earning stability. Yeah, these are all measures of quality. And when you zero in on sort of dividend growers, which is what we focus on in one of the products that I mentioned, these are companies that have, you know, have a history of increasing their dividends over a number of years, typically, you know, call it 10 years. So what you're self-selecting is a pool of companies that have, you know, all these attributes that I just mentioned, but they are producing something tangible, which is returning capital to shareholders on a consistent growing basis, right? And so why is that important right now? Well, if you go into an environment where the cost of capital has increased and, you know, economic environment is probably slowing down, inflation is probably higher, interest rates are higher, all those things, well, you probably want companies that are going to be able to navigate a choppier environment. One, companies that have been around for a while, so they've navigated these environments in the past. That's number one. So they've got a strong history. Two, these are companies that have financial strength, right? They have the balance sheet to sort of navigate throughout these periods of distress. They obviously have, you know, strong market share positions. So when you talk about inflation, you know, think about just investment 101. Costs go up. You know, your ability to price for a higher cost of higher input cost and maintain your margins, right? That's sort of investing 101, right? And so in order to do that, you need to have a business that is, you know, not as much price and elasticity, right? So you can raise prices and not lose share. So that's also an aspect. But another aspect that is important for these companies, if you think about, you know, how multiples have come in over the last year or so with the market being down. I know we've had a rally here, but, you know, multiples have come down, stock prices have come down. These companies are also in strong financial positions to potentially be acquirers, right? These are companies that can, you know, acquire technologies, acquire smaller competitors, and really strengthen themselves in this down cycle by either one, taking share from weaker competitors, or also just acquiring new technologies and growing on the other side.
Yeah. So you mentioned some of the market behavior. So let's get into a little bit about what's going on with equities and how you're thinking about investing today. So we've seen a big bounce off the bottom going back to October. There was kind of an attempt to retest, didn't get all the way back down. We had the banking sort of, I wouldn't say crisis, but turmoil back in March. And you've seen sort of this rip a little bit in the NASDAQ in particular, but there's not been a ton of breadth. It's been driven heavily by the big names in the NASDAQ. And so, you know, it's been largely driven by big tech, kind of the same old mega caps, not all, but, you know, that's been certainly a big driver. So what are you and your team seeing under the hood now as to where the opportunity from here could be?
Sure. Yeah, it certainly felt like a crisis in March, I will say, having lived through that that pocket of time just recently. But yeah, you're absolutely right. So the market's been rallying since October of last year. Year to date, we're up about 10% in the market. And you come off of a May that was extremely narrow. I think only 23% of the S&P 23% of the stocks in the S&P actually beat the market in May, and so one of the narrowest advances that we've had, in many years. Mm-hmm. I don't think it tells the full story. There are pockets of the market that have been strong. If you look at home builders or semiconductors, certain areas of that. But what we've really seen is that last year's winners have been this year's losers, and vice versa. Right. So if you think about what sort of led the market last year, you had energy. Material names do quite well, and the massive underperformance of technology, particularly unprofitable or high multiple tech, and those names have bounced back rather strongly here off the bottom in October and further in year to date. But I will say, if you dive into earnings and you look at where the positive earnings revisions have been, they really have been in those mega cap tech names, and mm-hmm. so a lot of that move has been somewhat justified. We just got through the first quarter earnings season. Earnings were down about 2%, I think, year over year, with expectations was they were going to be around 7%. So, you know, there were positive revisions in the overall market, but the bulk of those were in comm services and technology, so the areas that have outperformed. As far as what we're looking at, the market can go a few ways, right? The market continues to push higher. I think one would have to argue that you would expect more breadth of that performance. So not necessarily the mega cap names that have outperformed continue, like they don't necessarily have to go down, but I think you potentially could see more breadth or more participation in the equity market as we move further into this recovery. The Fed is, potentially goes on pause, though we did have a strong jobs report here just recently, and inflation begins to tamp down. You may see more convergence in performance from some of the laggards towards big tech. And then just maybe on the opposite things, if things do get, a bit choppier, we maybe get scarier inflation, or we get a harder landing than we have had so far, one could argue that you would have, potentially those mega cap tech names underperform and gap down and maybe catch up to some of the market. What people talk about negatively when they think about the overall equity market, certainly coming into this year, was, you have an inverted yield curve, you have a potential on the horizon, and you have an equity market trading at, call it 18 times forward mm-hmm. earnings. So on the surface, expensive. But as I mentioned, if you look at an equal weighted multiples, they're lower, right? A lot of that valuation push higher is also skewed by megatech, and there are cheaper pockets of the market that are trading at decent valuations, and we're seeing value in those areas as well. High quality names as well, names that I referenced earlier, not trading at exorbitant valuations that we feel very confident can navigate any sort of economic environment. Yeah. So that's where we're really spending some time.
Yeah, and so maybe going a little bit one step further there. I mean, one aspect that seems to be driving the market right now, at least, is generative AI. And what OpenAI has brought to the market, it's kind of stunned many people, and a lot of investors are trying to figure out how to play that. Now, I know you're not a high-growth innovation investor. We've got a separate team here at Lord Abbett that does that, but I'm sure you guys are thinking about the implications in the types of stocks you look to own or maybe not own, if that proves to be a very disruptive technology, as it looks like it's probably going to be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it's been pretty incredible. And this feels a lot more sustainable than some of the speculation that we saw in, crypto and some of the other areas mm-hmm. Of the market over the last few years. Generative AI does seem like a game-changing technological switch that's going to impact the global economy and then all markets rather dramatically. But it's unknowable what the ultimate shakeout will be. So obviously, our team and everyone is trying to figure it out. I think we do feel pretty comfortable that, the computing power necessary to drive this will help the semiconductor ecosystem. That's been an area where we've been overweight even before sort of the generative AI excitement hit this year. Obviously, the clear winner here has been NVIDIA. You know, the stock, you know, is up over 100% year to date. And if you think about they just printed an earnings print where the stock jumped, you know, around 20 some odd percent, but the multiple actually went down because the earnings revisions were so powerful, you know, on the heels of this. So, you know, you have an obvious winner there.
You're saying NVIDIA is a value stock now?
I don't know. I don't know it's a value stock. I know it's cheaper than it was before. That's a great, but then on the other side of it, you're trying to figure out, you know, again, going back to the companies that we invest in, right? These are companies, as I mentioned, that have strong balance sheets. These are companies that have lived through many market cycles. These companies have been thinking about AI for many, many years in many instances. And again, they're going to be able to either, you know, make the technological investments to integrate this into their business models to hopefully, you know, become more productive, drive down costs potentially, and drive margins higher. This is what good companies do. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, again, acquire these technologies from smaller companies that have been innovative over the years. So, you know, there will be a potential new list of winners and losers. We don't necessarily know who that will be right now. But again, you know, what you're trying to do with our investment philosophy and process is we're self-selecting a group of quality companies that have gone through cycles in the past and who have been able to navigate these technological changes and come out on the other side stronger. And we would expect our companies to be able to do that with this cycle as well.
Okay. Let's get back to, you know, the investing part of this and kind of how you think about portfolios. And, you know, this question relates to the title of this podcast, The Active Investor. And, you know, maybe talk about why someone wouldn't want to just index quality or index like a dividend growth ETF. Indexing had a fantastic run following the GFC in hindsight. And, you know, why not just buy an ETF here and call it a day?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. What I will say is as we just discussed, the world is changing quite rapidly. You know, something that you and I talk about a bit, and then something that I'm very cognizant of is, you know, if you look at a list of the top 10 names in the S&P 500 every decade, that's a very dynamic list. And if you think about what an ETF is, it's basically just capturing last cycle's winners, right? It adjusts once a year when they reconstitute things. And so what you're doing, potentially you're taking unintended risk. And you're basically buying momentum and you're buying, you know, last cycle's winners. So as active managers, our job is to hopefully, you know, skate where the puck is going, right? At some point, Intel was a leader in the semiconductor space. But if you stuck with Intel and missed NVIDIA, that was a big move, right? Who knows how it ultimately shakes out with the mega cap tech names. Maybe they all ultimately win, but maybe one of them gets disintermediated over that time period. And that's going to be a big component of any sort of ETF that one may own. And then, you know, it's a small example. But as we talked about earlier, you think about the bank failures, SIVB, First Republic, SBNY, those names were ultimately zeros. And, you know, if you owned them in an ETF, you rolled that down. But if you were an active manager that was aware of some of those issues going on, you were able to potentially move away from that. So that's one point. The second thing I think what many of us are focused on is in something you touched on earlier. If we're in an environment where inflation is somewhat higher and rates are higher, mm-hmm. You know, it could be into an environment that is more like what we've seen prior to the GFC, where there's more dispersion in performance. It's not a sort of a one-way trade where you sort of just buy duration and momentum. I know this has not been the case so far year to date, but you know, an environment that you know, cost of capital is not zero, and rapid technological change would probably argue for a new list of winners and losers, more dispersion within the market, which would be to the benefit of an active manager like ourselves.
Yeah, I know you've made the comment before that sometimes it's a Sweetgreen's market and sometimes it's a McDonald's market. You think it's more of a McDonald's market right now?
Yeah. That's I may have stolen that from somebody. That might be a Kramer line more than me. But I think it is indicative of that, right? I mean, and I think you have to remove large cap mega tech from that conversation, because these are quality companies. These are companies with tremendous free cash flow, strong balance sheets, et cetera, et cetera. But then you have to differentiate that between unprofitable tech, between, firms that, basically were selling a dream, right? If you think about the, I love the clip where you look at the top Super Bowl advertisers 2 years ago and then last year, and, how the number of those who, some are gone and the stock prices have dropped rather dramatically. But yeah, so those companies, that speculative blow off that we had in, Bitcoin and some of these other areas, that probably has run its course, right? We've lived through a similar, something similar in 99, 2000, and it takes a while for the market to correct. And again, the high quality, maybe boring companies that are going to give you consistent returns, consistent return of capital to shareholders, and able to navigate a potential slower economic environment, should outperform companies that were basically the beneficiaries of free money by the Fed, or the wave of liquidity that the world's been awash in. And as that begins to dry up, there's going to be more differentiation. And I think that should be to the benefit of the type of companies that we look at, namely high quality companies.
Yep. All right. Well, you sound cautiously bullish that there might be some new a new group of winners in a new environment. So sounds like quality might be the place to go.
Yeah. Ultimately, people have been more bearish for a longer period of time than I can remember much of my career. And so many people have been caught off guard by the rally that we've had since October and January. And so when I get the question of, I don't want to step into the equity markets right now, that may be fine for individuals. But what you realize is that it's impossible to time these bottoms. Mm-hmm. And if you're trying to build wealth over a period of years, it really is, as corny as it sounds, time in the market as opposed to timing the market.
Right.
And if you think about our strategy of dividend growers, or a strategy of focusing on dividend growers, what you're getting is a better sequence of returns in the overall market. So you're getting better downside protection, and you're getting similar returns over a cycle. And I only bring that up to say is that that helps keep people invested when you have a smoother ride to the same destination, because ultimately, people tend to buy too high and sell too low. And if you can take away some of that, the amplitude and drops and navigate some of that volatility and end up in the same location, that's powerful stuff over a cycle to keep
yep.
investors in the market.
Good stuff. So with that, I think we can wrap things up here. And I'll just say thank you for joining the podcast, Darnell. Some really good perspectives on equity investing and the markets today. Definitely look forward to having you back again for a check-in.
We'd love to. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks again, Darnell. And for listeners wanting to learn more about Lord Abbett's views on the markets, including a white paper on this topic, please visit the insights section of lordabbett.com. And we'd also like to hear from our listeners. So if you have any comments about today's podcast or ideas for future podcasts, we welcome your thoughts and email podcasts@lordabbett.com. And so we'll leave it there. This has been the Active Investor Podcast, and thank you for listening.
Performance information for NVIDIA shares is for 2023 to the date through June 2nd and provided by Bloomberg. The U.S. Federal Reserve is the central bank of the United States. The federal funds, or Fed funds rate, is the target interest rate set by the Fed at which commercial banks borrow and lend their excess reserves to each other overnight.
ETF refers to exchange traded fund. The NASDAQ Composite Index is a market capitalization weighted index of more than 3,700 stocks listed on the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. The S&P 500 Index is widely regarded as the standard for measuring large cap U.S. stock market performance and includes a representative sample of leading companies in leading industries. Indexes are unmanaged and do not reflect the deduction of fees or expenses and are not available for direct investment.
Mentions of specific companies are for reference purposes only and are not meant to describe the investment merits of, or potential, or actual portfolio changes related to, securities of those companies.
Unless otherwise noted,
All discussions are based on U.S. markets and U.S. monetary and fiscal policies. Market forecasts and projections are based on current market conditions and subject to change without notice. Projections should not be considered a guarantee. The views and opinions expressed by the Lord Abbott speaker are those of the speaker as of the date of the broadcast and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm as a whole. Any such views are subject to change at any time based upon market conditions or other conditions, and Lord Abbott disclaims any responsibility to update such views. This material is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice. It is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. Neither Lord Abbott nor the Lord Abbott speaker can be responsible for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information offered. None of the information provided should be regarded as a suggestion to engage in or refrain from any investment-related course of action, as neither Lord Abbott nor its affiliates are undertaking to provide impartial investment advice, act as an impartial advisor, or give advice in a fiduciary capacity.